It was truly happening. He'd been kidnapped. It wasn't some nightmare that would soak his nightshirt with sweat but leave him unscathed. His tutor had tried to shield him from the world as best he could. But there was no preparation for this. Nathaniel missed him desperately, aching for his reassuring presence, his kind, thoughtful answers and advice. They hadn't the money to buy Nathaniel's way into Cambridge or Oxford, and Mr. Chisholm had warned Walter that he simply did not possess the aptitude for academics or law. His generous way of saying Nathaniel was too stupid. Even the church wasn't an option, since reading was too important a requirement. Not that Nathaniel had a whit of desire to be a clergyman. He'd considered the navy, but Walter had insisted Nathaniel would marry Elizabeth first. His studies had been a struggle for as long as he could remember. While Susanna was pleased to while away hour upon hour reading, Nathaniel had always longed to be outside, to run and climb and swim, to move. Words on a page didn't unfold and flow for him the way they seemed to for others. When Susanna read aloud to him, she didn't stumble or become confused. The words streamed out like water, with meaning and inflection. Nathaniel understood everything he heard, but when ink was put to paper, words confounded him. When they were children, she'd helped him memorize words, explaining what they meant and teaching him better than any tutor, even dear Mr. Chisholm. She'd be a wonderful mother, patient and kind, with a mischievous streak he hoped would remain all her days. Once, as a lad, Nathaniel had confessed to his tutor that he envied the servants and their physical tasks. Mr. Chisholm had given him an uncharacteristically stern look and said, "Spoken like a boy of privilege who will never serve." He was right, and shame still pricked Nathaniel that he was so discontent with his lot in life when many others had it very much the worse. He just wished he didn't feel so wrong in so many ways. Mr. Chisholm had then softened and ruefully said the stork had delivered him to the wrong house, before drilling him on his pathetic Latin conjugation again. A useless endeavour, if ever there was one. He laughed humorlessly to himself now. The stork. By the time Mr. Chisholm had determined Nathaniel old enough to be informed of the true manner of how babes were born, Susanna had already told him in great detail. He still wasn't sure how she'd learned, since prim Jane had never been one to gossip. Susanna. Was she all right? He was powerless to comfort her, and despair welled up again, along with a wave of loneliness that would have laid him low if he hadn't already been huddled on the floor. He closed his eyes again, memories filling his mind. When he'd questioned the stork theory, Susanna had whispered that they would watch when the stud horse came to impregnate their new mare, and that would explain everything. On that rainy, grey day, they'd squirreled themselves away around the corner of the barn, flat on their tummies, coats soaked through, taking turns with Father's ornamental yet entirely functional spyglass. In the paddock, the mare had whinnied and run this way and that, before finally being cornered and mounted.
"That's what Father did to Mother?" Nathaniel had whispered in horror.
Susanna had huffed.
"No, that's only how animals do it. Women lie on their backs, but otherwise it's the same."
Watching the stallion have its way, Nathaniel's blood had stirred in ways he couldn't comprehend. When he'd eventually begun waking with wet sheets, and his prick stiffened seemingly with a life of its own, he'd often take himself in hand, the image of that stallion filling his mind time and time again.
"Coat black as pitch. Hind legs thick and powerful as it mastered the quivering mare."
Its cock, when it cornered her, had hung impossibly huge and thick, and Nathaniel had imagined how that hot, iron flesh must feel inside. When he'd heard from one of his older cousins what sodomy meant, It had stirred something deep and unsettling in him. While his friends from neighbouring estates fantasized about lifting a lady's skirts or touching her creamy, delicate breasts, Nathaniel had remained unmoved by women's charms. Not only was he feeble-minded, he was a deviant to boot. He wanted cock, hard and thick and unrelenting. At times just rain or mud and a brisk wind could conjure vivid memories of that stallion on that spring day. Living in England, it had rather been a hazard. He cringed at the thought of dooming an unfortunate girl to a life with not only a dunce who could barely read two words before stumbling, but a sinner with unnatural defects. He knew he should strive to overcome his nature, but any attempts had left him despairing of the hopelessness. Perhaps it would be better for poor Elizabeth Davenport and him alike if the scurrilous pirates were his doom. His sinful desires to rut with men, to be consumed by them, had only grown stronger the more he'd tried to quell them. There had been several times when he desperately wanted to confide in Susanna, but he had feared her rejection too much. Nathaniel blinked at the cabin. He'd opened his eyes at some point, and he was still there. If only he could wake on the proud William with Susanna's snores rumbling. His throat tightened painfully. God, would he ever see her again? He couldn't just sit there. He had to try and do something. Anything. With one eye on the door, Nathaniel tiptoed, the floor creaking. He wagered the pirate wouldn't be back for some time. He stopped to unbuckle his shoes and roll off his woolen stockings, which he tossed into the corner where he'd been told to stay. He spread his toes on the worn planks in relief. Peeking in drawers, he found dark clothing, trousers and shirts, some pale linen underthings. No stockings or waistcoats, for what use would a pirate have for those? Nathaniel couldn't deny a moment of jealousy at the freedom. He unbuttoned his own hated waistcoat and tossed it in the corner as well. He wasn't even sure what he was looking for. Did he imagine he would stumble upon a weapon and then... What? Best not only the pirate captain, but the entire crew? Still, he searched. The chest only held more linens and odds and ends. The dark desk dominated much of the cabin, facing the door, which was tucked off to the side near the port hull. The bed was built into the wall adjacent to the door. Red velvet drapes were tied back with yellow tassels on either side of the bed. The colours faded from the sun. Judging by the dust clinging to the velvet, the drapes hadn't been closed or shaken out in some time. The bed linens were wrinkled, though surprisingly white. Nathaniel glared at his scratchy, musty blanket. Listening for footsteps in the corridor, he examined the wide, dark wood desk. It had a tinge of red in the grain and was well constructed, wood extending on the front and sides all the way to the floor, making it a singularly solid piece of furniture. The carved chair was of an almost black wood. The high back was carved in the form of a winged bird, a hawk naturally, looming over serpents. The neck of one was captured in the hawk's beak, talons tearing into the thing, its fangs useless as it struggled. The chair certainly made a statement. The seat cushion was again red velvet, well used. The top of the desk was neat. A nautical chart had rolled in on itself, and the thick captain's log sat closed, ink and quill nearby. A curling silver candelabra with melted-down candles sat off to the side, a few drops of wax having dripped onto the desk and dried there. There was no guest chair on the other side of the desk, perhaps indicating that the pirate didn't entertain much consultation. The desk, of course, contained drawers. Bottles of rum and port were stashed in the lower one. As Nathaniel edged out the top drawer, he heard a thud and voices outside the door. Heart in his throat. Fresh panic popping in his veins, he dove for the corner, curling against the wall atop the horrible blanket, eyes locked on the door, waiting for the key to scrape in the lock. yet it didn't. And as minutes passed, no one entered. The damned Manta sailed on, hull creaking, rocking gently as it cut through the waves. Would the merchant ship reach Primrose Isle when its captain had predicted? And would his father care enough to attempt to save Nathaniel? Would the last days of his life be spent locked away in this room, either alone or with a monster for company? He wasn't sure which was worse as he lifted his fingers to his tender throat, which throbbed after Hawk's rough treatment. He imagined Susanna's slender hand tucked into the crook of his arm as they strolled the decks of the proud William in the afternoon. Could hear the lilt of her sunny voice reading him story after story. Useless tears pricking his eyes, he bowed his head and prayed she and her babe were unharmed on their journey to Primrose Isle. If only their father hadn't set them all on this course to the new world. Nathaniel pushed away his fear in favour of resentment. Father had spent a ridiculous sum importing primroses and other flowers from England to the island. According to Susanna's husband, he'd been furious when they hadn't taken root, the tropical plants running roughshod over them, choking them with flowering vines and bright bursts of blooms. The island had previously been uninhabited, and Nathaniel secretly hoped it would remain untamed for years to come. Yet he knew no matter how unyielding the vegetation, if England was determined to overrun it, she would, without concern as to how many suffered and were enslaved in the process. Some years ago, during one of Walter's visits home from Jamaica, Nathaniel had argued with him at breakfast about paying fair wages for labour in the colonies. If the law said a person could not be a slave in England, how was it right in the New World? He could still envision Father's red-faced fury at these radical ideas, spittle flying from his lips as he demanded to know if Nathaniel had learned them from his tutor. Protecting Mr. Chisholm, Nathaniel said he'd seen a Quaker pamphlet on a trip to London.
"And how did you read it, you simpleton?"
Nathaniel had insisted a neighbour boy relayed it to him. Truthfully, there had been a Quaker publication, but Mr. Chisholm had read it to him. Perhaps Nathaniel could argue for fairness on Primrose Isle. Not that he would be much good at it with his dim wits. Still, he would try. If he survived. He curled in the corner of his prison where he'd remain for the next, what, 4 weeks, the devil had said. And if Walter refused to pay... No, Nathaniel couldn't dwell on it. All he could do was hope this wouldn't be his bloody end. He touched his tender throat again, remembering the crush of Hawk's powerful hand. He had to withstand his captivity, and he'd drive himself utterly mad if he didn't push aside his fear. Nathaniel was powerless over everything but his own mind, and if he could just keep himself occupied, he'd survive this. He glanced around his prison, heart sinking. Of course, keeping occupied was easier said than done when he couldn't move. Even after being kidnapped by pirates, restless boredom would apparently be his companion once more. The captain's cabin was surely the largest on the sloop, but trapped inside it, Nathaniel would go mad in a matter of days. Chapter 4 The bosun's whistle for all hands on deck cut through the air, and the men gathered. Standing at the helm, Snell at his side, Hawk surveyed them silently, waiting for the shuffling and jostling to cease, waiting until he had their undivided attention. He still carried all his weapons, including the dagger confiscated from the prisoner. His lower back protested at the extra weight on his belt, and he cursed himself for not locking it all away safely before returning up top. He made sure his voice carried across the deck.
"By now you are all aware of the unexpected treasure we've captured. My brothers, this windfall will reap us a reward greater than we could have dreamed when we spotted that merchant ship. Our new mission is to ransom Walter Bainbridge's son."
"Framatch!"
a voice called,
100.
Hawk paused for dramatic effect.
£1,000.
The men looked at each other, murmuring and smiling, visions of their share of the bounty dancing in their heads. Yet one, Deeks, asked,
"Shouldn't we have taken a vote?"
Hawk sighed internally. Yes, they should have, and he hadn't even paused to consider it. His vision narrowed on the dual prize of revenge against Bainbridge, and the possibility of a peaceful retirement from the sea. But he also wanted to leave the crew in good stead, with enough money that they could live well unless they squandered it, which some surely would. That was out of his hands. He nodded.
"Yes. Forgive me, my brothers. I was swept up in my excitement over our future riches. By all means, of course, we will vote. Your choices are these. Continue to sail without a plan, hoping we stumbled upon a prize. Perhaps some tobacco or sugar we can trade in Nassau for enough coin to spend a few days drinking and whoring before we set out to do it all again. And again. And again."
He waited, letting that option sink in.
"Or we ransom lying, cheating Walter Bainbridge's only son for £100,000.
Or however much Bainbridge could raise. But the men didn't need to know that. Hawk had set the bar high for the men's sake as well, and hopefully the ransom would come close so they could share a generous bounty. More than they could ever expect to win unless they miraculously stumbled upon a ship with treasure in its hold.
"For the next month, we relax. We don't fight over scraps with other ships flying the black. We don't risk death battling said ships. We stay out of the trading channels. Then we simply deliver this one piece of cargo and become richer than we thought possible with one haul."
He let that sink in as well. Then,
"Mr. Snell, the vote, if you please."
Doing an admirable job of not smirking, Snell cleared his throat.
"We all know the captain is a man of his word. While most privateer captains take up to 14 shares of a prize, Captain Hawk only ever claimed 2. The same he does now. A fair share for the work he does guiding us, protecting us. Mr. Walker, you made how much doing back-breaking work at a rich man's estate in Boston?"
Walker answered, "12 stinking pound a year." Snell gazed over the men.
£12. A year. There are 46 of us on this ship. Captain will get his 2 shares, 1.5 for me. Part will go into the fund for the injured and so on. But when all is said and done, it will be £2,000 for each of you. I know we all dream of striking Spanish gold in the next ship on the horizon. While this may not be millions, it is not a prize to be underestimated. All in favour?"
Hands went up with a raucous cheer.
Hawk grinned.
"That's the spirit of the damned manor."
He waited a few moments before raising his hands and quieting the men.
"The boy will remain in my cabin. Untouched, unarmed. Some of you will tend to him when needed. Food, water, emptying the pot if I am otherwise engaged. Do not speak to him or allow him to ensnare you. Some of you will remember his father or have heard tales of his treachery. Walter Bainbridge is a snake in the grass, and his son is surely just as slippery and deceitful."
The men nodded, murmuring in agreement.
"Don't be taken in by his innocent countenance. He's a spoiled, lazy brat, who's had everything handed to him without a minute's work, without a moment's hardship."
More agreement. Then,
"What happens if the old man don't pay?"
Hawk identified the man speaking. Red hair, scrawny, a perpetual scowl, rapacious hunger coiled in his long limbs. It was the sailor who had just joined them from the Proud William. Already speaking so boldly could signal trouble. But Hawk would give him the benefit of the doubt. Hawk knew how miserable those merchant ships could be, just like the Navy, working oneself to the bone for next to nothing.
Ah, our new brother. Your name?
Talay.
He glanced around as if daring anyone to contradict him.
A valid question. I'm confident Bainbridge will pay the ransom.
Another man spoke up.
I thought Primrose Isle was failing. Ain't supposed to be any money there, not enough food, more and more people putting up stakes and going to the Carolinas or Jamaica. Thought that was why we've never bothered with the place.
Absolutely true. But Bainbridge is a venal, greedy man. We've heard as well that he lives in a grand house on the colony, that he thrives while his people struggle. He grasps for power. And what message would it send to the rest of the New World if he allowed pirates to murder his only son?
If he displayed such weakness, such vulnerability?
The men murmured, nodding to each other.
Hawk continued, "He cannot permit it. His pride will not. If he doesn't possess the funds, he will acquire them one way or another, or his reputation would suffer a devastating blow. No matter the truth, he cannot appear weak. Of that I am certain. I am also certain we will have a battle on our hands once we make the exchange."
Hawk grinned wolfishly.
"But the damned manter never runs from a fight when our prize is so valuable. Who's with me?"
The men cheered, raising their fists. One shouted,
"Revenge will be fucking sweet!"
Hawk couldn't agree more.
"Now we sail for Nassau to trade the rest of the cargo."
More cheers, and Hawk didn't tell them the stop in Nassau would be far, far briefer than they'd like. It was too great a risk to anchor there for long. If word got out of their ransom, they'd be fighting off other pirates. No, better to keep moving, staying out of the shipping channels, sailing close enough to Primrose Isle, but not too close. The men went back to work, excitement fueling their steps, and Hawk turned to survey the sea behind them, the ship's wake fanning out. Snell rejoined him after a time, asking,
"Spot anything we don't?"
Hawk laughed softly.
"Afraid my eyesight's not what it once was." "My everything's not what it once was."
Snell ran a hand over his thinning blonde hair and patted his thick stomach. They stood in companionable silence, and Hawk scanned the horizon. It was true, his vision wasn't quite as sharp as it had been decades before when he'd earned his nickname, but he still kept a keen watch. As a lad, he'd quickly become known as the best lookout on the ship he'd served.
"Eyes like a hawk up there!"
He credited his boyhood on Cornwall Cliffs, watching the sea, pining for her embrace.
"Careful what you wish for."
Sometimes Hawk missed the peace of the lookout, high above the bustle and chatter. It was a good crew, a hard-working crew. But if they just shut up sometimes... He shook his head.
"I'm getting too old for this."
Snell snorted.
"If you're too old, I'm fucking ancient." "Well, I wasn't going to say it in quite those words, but all right, all right."
Snell's smile faded.
"What a fucking Bainbridge, that piece of shit. I suppose it was inevitable that our path would cross his again."
He was silent for some time, but Hawk knew Snell had more to say, so he waited. Finally, Snell continued, gaze on the horizon.
"I've wondered why we've avoided Bainbridge after what he did. Because of him, we almost swung. Many men would have paid him a visit to settle accounts long before now. But not you. At first it wasn't worth the risk. We had to make a living, establish ourselves under the black. Aye, create a Sea Hawk's reputation.
When Bainbridge became governor of that new colony, I thought about paying him a visit. Fantasized. He gripped the rail, conjuring the vision of his hands around Walter Bainbridge's throat. The whoreson skin violently red, eyes bulging, tongue lolling as Hawk choked the life from him. Or perhaps he'd run him through on his sword, or tie him up and...
Yet we've stayed away. Why?
Taking a long breath, Hawk banished the images of Bainbridge's demise.
I expected you to ask long before this.
Snell cut him a glance and smirked.
You think I haven't learned that you'll do a thing when you're good and ready and not a moment before?
Hawk had to smile.
Fair point.
The last thing I wanted was to make a martyr of the man.
That's what would have happened if we'd stormed into the new colony and strung him up.
It would be another mark against the evil pirates, and he our innocent victim.
They'd probably erect a fucking statue in his image.
No, I couldn't abide it.
I knew the time would come for revenge and that I'd recognize it.
Sure enough, here we are. And in the meantime, we hear Bainbridge has lost the confidence of the crown in his mishandling of affairs on Primrose Isle. That we took his son at all will be another blow. Yes. Rumour has it his time in power would end soon. I imagine the future of the colony itself is in question. England doesn't want to send good money after bad.
Why the fuck would they, not with such prosperity elsewhere in the new world?
Hawk's blood stirred at the promise of finally having his revenge.
Bainbridge will be desperate to preserve what he can of his reputation and not appear weakened. The money is the least he owes us after destroying our livelihood with a stroke of his quill.
And when I kill him now, few will mourn, and no one will canonize him.
That old son underestimated us before, not likely to do it again. Not sure if that's a good thing or bad.
Neither am I. We must take care.
Will the son be any trouble?
Hawk shook his head dismissively.
He's nothing but a little man, snivelling coward like his father.
To be fair, Bainbridge seemed willing to do anything to protect his sister. But that was a low bar in assessing a man's worth.
He won't be a problem.
Snell whistled softly.
Just think if we can pull this off.
Hawk spread his hands wide over the railing, watching sunlight gleam on the waves, unfamiliar hopefulness flowing through him.
Perhaps it will be the Sea Ark's final operation.
Pardon?
Half laughing, Snell stared at him with brow furrowed.
What nonsense is this?
Resisting the urge to shift from foot to foot under the scrutiny, Hawk kept his gaze on the sea.
With this ransom, I would leave you and the men in good stead. You could be captain when I'm gone.
Snell snorted.
I'm a damn good quartermaster because I know how to keep the men happy enough to stay in line. Captains must plan battles and the like, be mysterious and forbidding. Not my area of expertise. Besides, you won't be going anywhere.
His stomach twisted. I won't.
I've seen this before, this restlessness. It'll pass. You'd never be able to leave when it comes down to it. I mean, what the fuck would you do with yourself?
He shrugged, cheeks hot.
Fish, farm a little. No more fighting.
Snell laughed heartily.
You'd be born in a day.
The grass may seem greener and all that,
but can you really fathom such a life?
He clapped Hawk's shoulder, smile fading.
Besides, the sea doesn't give up her servants so easily.
You know there's only one way out for us. So we should enjoy ourselves in the meantime.
A sickening sensation washed through Hawk. His limbs weighted with it, a cannonball in his gut. He croaked.
Aye.
Snell sighed.
After these loggerheads get their act together,
he shouted behind him.
Peters, are you fucking deaf? What did I just tell you this morning?
Hawk smiled obligingly as Snell gave him another clap on the shoulder and went about his business. Gazing out into the vast nothing, Hawk still couldn't help but imagine what could lie beyond. A little house, a hearth and warm tea in the mornings, an honest day's work ahead of him, a full night's sleep in a proper bed, ground that wasn't forever shifting beneath him. Perhaps even a man to warm that bed, to live by his side in comfort. He laughed harshly to himself. Nonsense, indeed. Men who lived by the sword didn't enjoy peaceful retirements. He didn't deserve it, and regardless, Snell was surely right. It wouldn't suit him in the least. A life at sea was what he'd craved as long as he could remember. So why would he want to give it up? Especially now that he was a pirate captain with more power than he'd ever imagined. Yet Hawk couldn't quite banish the fantasy completely, tucking it away in the corner of his mind since he was apparently intent on tormenting himself despite his better judgment. He took the wheel for a time. The day passed slowly, and several times he had to stop himself from returning to his cabin to see how his prisoner fared. The longer he left Little Plum alone, the sooner the boy would be cowed completely. Hawk ate his evening meal with the men of the second dog watch as the sun went down. The young man stationed outside Hawk's cabin snapped to attention as he approached. Hawk asked, "Did he try to bargain with you?"
"No, sir, barely looked up from the floor."
Hawk held out his hand for the key.
"Very good, Mr. Porter. Be sure to keep your guard up around him in the days to come." "Dismissed."
Following his own advice, Hawk turned the key swiftly and entered his cabin braced for attack. None came. Arms around knees, Plum huddled in his corner, where the starboard side of the hull met the stern. Hawk could just glimpse his head over the desk. Hawk swaggered around as if he didn't have a care in the world, remaining alert, hand resting casually on his sword hilt. Plum kept his gaze on his feet, which were now bare. At least he had the good sense to do away with shoes and stockings. After a day of full sunshine, Hawk longed to tug off his stifling boots. But not yet. He surveyed the bowl of food on the floor, which appeared untouched. So fucking much for good sense.
"Eight."
No reply.
Hawk growled. "Have you gone deaf?"
Plum mumbled something, and Hawk demanded,
"Look at me!"
Plum's head snapped up. "I said I'm not hungry."
"Is that so? And what makes you think I give a fuck whether or not you're hungry? You will eat when I tell you to. Do I have to hold your nose and shove that stew down your throat?"
The boy was full of shit. Of course he was hungry. He'd drained most of his cup of water, at least. But this brainless rebellion had to be crushed. Hawk stepped closer, spreading his legs slightly, looming over his prisoner.
"Do I have to chain you naked to the bed after all?"
Adam's apple bobbing, Plum's gaze darted to the bulge of Hawk's cock in his trousers, his breath catching. Was it simply fear? Or something else as well. A spark in the air like flint on stone tightened Hawk's bollocks. Could it be Bainbridge just might enjoy being ravished? But no, Plum's lip curled with disgust. "You're repellent, a filthy animal."
"Keep fighting me and you'll find out just how filthy I am."
Plum shuddered. "You know Father won't pay if you hurt me, you monster." Hawk took his time, looking him over as if he were a piece of meat. He lifted his lips in a leering smile.
"There are plenty of things I can do to you that won't leave a mark."
"You blame my father for branding you a pirate, but clearly your heart was already black." Hawk lowered his voice another octave.
"I'll make you like it. Just imagine how much you'll hate yourself after that."
Bainbridge had no response but to reach for his bowl and shove a spoonful of stew into his mouth. He chewed angrily. But Hawk let him have his impotent rage. Plum was one of English society's puppets, so of course he was horrified by the thought of men fucking. He lived a buttoned-up, pathetic little life of obedience to his father. This excursion on a pirate ship would probably be the one burst of excitement in his entire existence.
Might as well give him a show, then. Slowly, carelessly, Hawk strode around the cabin, disrobing bit by bit. He took off his belt and tucked away his weapons, including the boy's dagger, in a chest and locked it. He considered commanding Plum to pull off his boots. Hawk would sit on the side of the bed with his trousers unlaced and shirt off, legs spread as far as he could, making his captive kneel. The thought coiled desire in his belly, a low, hot pulse. Must have been the lingering thrill of the hunt and capture that stirred him. Tormenting Bainbridge's son was one thing, but Hawk had to keep his lust in check. It wasn't typically a problem. He could go months with only his own hand, and happily. Yet there was something intoxicating about Plum and his little acts of defiance. Many men would have pissed themselves and wept. Hawk had seen it enough over the years. Still, he'd already given the boy too much time, although it was fun to toy with him. Hawk stripped off his shirt and unlaced his trousers, peeling them and his drawers down his legs, although he still wore his boots. He was quite sure he had Bainbridge's attention as he bent over, bare-assed, and pulled his feet free, resisting the urge to sigh in relief as he stretched his toes and kicked his trousers away. Naked, he walked slowly around his desk, passing within a few feet of the prisoner, Bainbridge's gaze surely following hot on his skin. Hawk opened the top drawer and pulled off his rings one by one, hiding his vexation when one of them caught stubbornly on his scarred knuckle. He liked the gold earring. He forgot about it most of the time and was occasionally surprised by it in the hand mirror when he shaved and shaped his short beard. But the rings he found cumbersome, and they only came out when Captain Hawk was in his full regalia. After dousing the lamp, Hawk stretched out on his mattress, naked, wincing at the stiffness in his back. He commanded, "Behave, or remember how your sister will suffer. Yes?"
"Yes,"
came the reply, brimming with resentment. Despite his resolution to ignore his prisoner, Hawk smiled to himself. Chapter 5
"I'll make you like it. Just imagine how much you'll hate yourself after that."
Even with the break of day, the words still echoed in Nathaniel's head as if hissed by the devil himself. There was no need to imagine a thing. He despised his weakness in not being able to rid himself of traitorous desires. He'd pretended to be asleep when Hawk roused in the darkness. There had been a few moments of silence when he'd been sure he was being watched, and he could understand deer freezing in place under a predator's scrutiny. Even after the key had scraped in the lock and he was sure he was alone, Nathaniel had stayed curled under the horrible blanket, sleeping fitfully again. Now the sun was in the sky and he wasn't sure what time it was. There had been no delivery of food and water, but perhaps that would only be once a day. He would have to ration his water or risk sipping from Hawk's bottles of alcohol. A dangerous proposition if he was discovered. Nathaniel had never been much for drink, but was tempted to dull his senses. Good Lord, it had only been a day. He'd never survive a month without going mad. And perhaps he wouldn't survive at all. If his father didn't pay. He wanted to scream. There was no way of foreseeing the future, so he must focus on the present and force away the worry lest he go mad. He kicked off the blanket, sweating, his breeches straining with a morning erection, a turgid state that only grew more pronounced as images of the pirate captain stripping off his clothes ran riot through Nathaniel's head. I can't even control my feeble mind. He'd tried not to look. He truly had. Yet he'd glimpsed the tanned, muscular flesh, the dark ink of a tattoo painting the pirate's sternum, depicting, what else? A seahawk with wings spread wide. The villain had dropped his drawers and trousers to his ankles, then bent to remove his boots, the pale, firm globes of his arse facing Nathaniel. Nathaniel wondered anew how the long scars had come to be over the pirate's buttocks, fingers of faded pink that were undoubtedly blood-red when inflicted. He couldn't imagine Hawk bending to anyone's will, being overpowered, subjugated. Yet clearly he had, since there was little doubt the scars came from a punishment. Curious. How had he suffered those scars, and when? Nathaniel thought men who were lashed took it on their backs, not lower. That line of reasoning, of course, made him think of lower, and the pirate's cock and balls hanging thick between his legs. I'll make you like it. The memory of Hawk's growl, his accent that carried perhaps a lingering hint of the West Country, sent flames of desire licking through Nathaniel. He spoke with the profanity of the sea, yet also like a learned man. Nathaniel wondered how he had come to be not merely a pirate when branded it, but the formidable seahawk. Tall and broad, scarred and weather-worn, dark hair dusted over thick muscles, fearsome and bold, wholly male in the primal way of a horse or a beast of the jungle. He groaned, giving in and unfastening his breeches, breath hitching as he wrapped his palm around his shaft. He admitted the truth, that the devil wouldn't have to put in much effort at all to make him like it. Spitting in his palm, he jerked himself, attempting, without success, to focus solely on the physical sensation. Does he really fuck other men? Would he make me suck his massive prick? Make me bend over and take it? Moaning, Nathaniel spread his knees, feet flat on the wooden planks. He'd used his own fingers in the past, but what would it be like to have another man's cock inside him? Not just any man's. The pirate blackguard's. It would be huge as it split him open. When Mr. Chisholm had taught him to wrestle so he could turn the tables on his vexing older cousins, it had somehow still been a gentlemanly pursuit. Nathaniel had loved the press of their bodies and feverishly dreamed of more while pleasuring himself in the privacy of his chambers. But when he tried to conjure Mr. Chisholm now, his blonde hair, green eyes starting to wrinkle in the corners as he passed 30 years, there was only darkness. The pirate king in his black raiding costume shining with gold, as bold and proud as the stallion that day in the paddock. Nathaniel shouldn't want that. He should want a good, kind man who would be gentle, not a monster. Yet as he touched himself, he reached up with his left hand, fingers skimming the sore bruises Hawk had left on his throat. He remembered the big, powerful hand choking him, as if it could have snapped his neck like a twig. And he moaned again. He skimmed his fingers over his face, which stubbornly refused to grow much hair. Other hand flying on his cock, he thought of the beard around Hawk's mouth, and how rough it would feel against his skin, in complete opposition to Lady's creamy, tender cheeks. Images ran rampant of Hawk bending him over the rail of the ship, mounting him, mastering him. Nathaniel cupped his hand over the end of his prick as he came, thudding his head back on the floor as he shuddered with each pulse, the hot pleasure scorching him, leaving him raw, leaving him empty and bitterly ashamed. Gut-churning, he searched for something on which to wipe his seed. Then he was caught in a nightmare as heavy footsteps approached and the key turned in the door. Desperately wiping his hand on the cursed blanket, Nathaniel barely got his breeches fastened and his shirt tucked down, springing to his feet as the door opened. And of course it wasn't some crew member, but the devil himself. Hawk froze in the entryway, eyes narrowing. He kicked the door shut.
What the fuck are you up to?
Nathaniel backed into the corner.
Nothing.
Hawk's fierce gaze swept around the cabin, then returned to Nathaniel.
The hell you say? He stormed over. What have you got there?
Too late. Nathaniel realized he'd instinctively thrust his sticky hand behind his back when Hawk entered the cabin. Now Hawk wrenched his arm out, Nathaniel wincing through the bolt of pain. He hadn't been able to wipe all the evidence away, and he cringed. With a derisive laugh, Hawk peered down at Nathaniel's sticky fingers, his grasp cruel.
Thought you'd spend your time wisely, hmm?
There isn't anything else to do.
Nathaniel straightened his shoulders and lifted his head, snatching back his hand, surprised when Hawk released it.
Well, why shouldn't I?
Why, indeed. Dreaming of tapping your pretty little betrothed?
Nathaniel sputtered. What? Who?
A dark eyebrow arched.
Your sister said you were to be married.
Oh, yes.
He cleared his throat and lifted his chin. Don't you dare speak of her. Hawk crowded him against the wall, all heat and muscle, and a sconce dug into Nathaniel's neck.
You dare tell me what to do? No. Not in my cabin. Not on my ship. Not ever. Understood.
He managed to nod, cursing how his flushed body tightened again at Hawk's proximity. Then Hawk turned and took a seat at the desk. He unrolled a nautical chart and opened his log, picking up the quill and dipping it in ink. For minutes, the quill scratched over paper, and Nathaniel stood against the wall, unsure what to do. Finally, he sank back to the floor, and Hawk didn't blink, ignoring him completely. When a man came with water and rations for Nathaniel, Hawk never so much as glanced up. Nathaniel determined he would wait until Hawk left again before eating. He hugged his knees to his chest and kept his eyes on the floorboards. Waiting. And waiting. And waiting. He broke down and had a sip of the tepid water, watching Hawk from the corner of his eye. Nothing. It was as if he wasn't even there. And somehow that made Nathaniel feel lower and more despairing than he had with Hawk's hand around his neck. Why should he want the attention of the villain who might kill him? No, of course he didn't. After a time, the quartermaster arrived. He stopped short when he spotted Nathaniel, as if he'd forgotten they'd taken a prisoner. Hawk asked him a question and continued to ignore Nathaniel's presence. Mr. Snell eventually did, too, as he spoke of navigation concerns and dark clouds in the distance. Yet every so often, his eyes darted back to Nathaniel, and he shifted from foot to foot where he leaned on the front of the desk, Hawk still sitting behind it. When Snell left and Hawk went back to writing in his log as if he were alone, Nathaniel's mind wandered, settling on the issue of his future wife. He knew the duties of a husband, and would do what he must. Perhaps he and Elizabeth could be dear friends, and having children to dote on wouldn't be unpleasant, not at all. He'd always liked little ones well enough.
Dreamin' of tuppin' your pretty little betrothed?
He didn't even know what Elizabeth looked like. She was nothing more than a notion, a vague idea of full skirts and flowery perfume, of a lady. Not that it mattered. No matter how fair her face, it wouldn't change his unnatural inclinations. Squeezing his sticky hand, he shuddered, shame pooling in his belly. So many times he'd wanted to ask Mr. Chisholm what made some men abominations, but had never dared. Instinct had told him he'd never be able to ask without giving himself away. Although Mr. Chisholm had never shown any indication, sometimes Nathaniel had wondered if he suspected the truth. But suspecting and knowing were two quite different things. Why had he been born thus? Was he being punished for killing his mother so he could live? for he had killed her, as much as the pirate accused Nathaniel's father. It had been Nathaniel who'd torn her open and stolen her last breath. He'd grown into half a man, his brain faulty. Unable to read, his desires unnatural.
Wrong.
Nathaniel realized Hawk's quill had gone quiet. In the silence he dared a peek, watching as Hawk blew on his freshly inked log so it wouldn't smear. Did the pirate have a wife somewhere, or a mistress? Or perhaps he simply visited the whorehouses Nathaniel was told sprouted like weeds in the West Indies?
I'll make you like it.
He couldn't banish the words from his head, and he mulled over the implications again. Could it really be that the Pirate King shared Nathaniel's inclinations? Of course, men at sea found release where they must, at least according to Nathaniel's cousins, who allegedly had it on good authority. They'd all shuddered at the thought of it, while Nathaniel had bit his tongue so hard he drew blood in an effort not to demand more details. Hawk would probably only take pleasure in tormenting Nathaniel, controlling him, punishing him. Nathaniel had never, to his knowledge, met another man who truly shared his sin, who would choose a man over a woman rather than simply indulging in unnatural couplings due to circumstance. Another who craved not only a man's touch, but kisses and smiles as well, companionship such as a wife would bring. Not that it was the kind of thing spoken about at dinners and garden parties. Apparently, reading over his words, Hawk absently rolled up the flowing sleeves on his black shirt, cuffing them at the elbow. His tanned skin was scattered with dark hair, forearms thick with ropey muscles. Yet without the flaring black coat, Nathaniel noticed Hawk wasn't quite as huge as he'd first thought. Still a good head taller than him, but not quite the giant he'd seemed. Another scar slashed across the back of Hawk's right hand, which rested by the logbook, his left dipping the delicate quill into the spot of ink with precision. Writing with one's left hand was reputedly the mark of the devil, so Nathaniel supposed he shouldn't be surprised. It was madness to think he was really there, on a pirate ship, that he wouldn't wake up swaying in the awful hammock, pretending to still sleep while Susanna used the pot, spending another long, boring day on the merchant ship, where he couldn't run or swim or climb.
Eight.
Hawk didn't look at him, eyes still on the page. Nathaniel stopped the lie. He was hungry. There was no sense in denying it or weakening himself by refusing his rations. He ate a spoonful of sloppy fish stew as bells tolled, choking down two soft potatoes, and then biting painfully into a thin, rock-hard biscuit as Hawk left the cabin, turning the key in his wake. Nathaniel thought of Primrose Isle, his father and a proper young lady named Elizabeth, a new life waiting on a new colony. A new life that would ensnare him even more thoroughly than he already was. Then he laughed out loud as he thought that being a monster's captive on a pirate ship and ending his life here was perhaps preferable. Madness, indeed. Chapter 6
Will I be permitted to cleanse myself at any point in the next month?
Hawk didn't look up from the chart he was examining.
Yes. Let me ring for the servants. We'll have the tub filled with perfectly heated water in no time. Scented with lavender. Or would you prefer jasmine?
Bainbridge huffed from the corner.
It's been a week down here. His voice adopted a hopeful lilt. Perhaps I could take a swim if we're dropping anchor close to shore for a few minutes. That's all I ask. It isn't much.
Huck tutted with full sympathy.
Truly, I was born to be an example of misfortune, and a target at which the arrows of adversity are aimed.
He glanced at Plum, who regarded him blankly.
Surely you've read Don Quixote?
Of course,
Plum insisted too quickly, looking away, cheeks flushing.
Odd.
While I know you believe you have suffered the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune, I assure you it could be worse. Much worse.
I have been kidnapped by pirates. If that is not outrageous fortune, I don't know what is. He had a point, and Hawk controlled a huff that threatened to become laughter.
Your lot could be far worse than the desire for a bath and apparent boredom, even though I've offered you dozens of books to pass your time. Of course, you could always amuse yourself in other, more physical ways.
He didn't have to look over to know Plum was blushing furiously. The taunt had the intended effect, and there was silence as minutes went by. The unintended consequence was that images of Plum pleasuring himself intruded into Hawk's mind. Bow lips parted with soft cries. Cock straining. Losing himself to a few minutes of abandon. Of freedom. The boy had a restless spirit Hawk hadn't expected in the least from Walter Bainbridge's son. Although he was whining for a bath, Hawk had a feeling it was more about getting back up on deck with freedom to move. He was a coiled spring, despairing at his containment, fidgeting endlessly. Hawk had expected a much more indolent creature. "Sure enough," Plum said, "if I could only go on deck the next time it rains. How I miss the rain. I used to go out exploring in it for hours. But even just for a few minutes."
"Whatever ploy you have concocted, abandon it."
"It's no ploy. It's been cloudy for days, and it has to rain soon. I only want to breathe some fresh air and be cleansed." The stern windows in Hawk's cabin were closed to the chilled wind, and if the brat couldn't be bothered to open them from time to time, to hell with him. Clearly he was lazy after all.
"Now."
"If I'm so useless, why don't you let me up there? What could I possibly do to a ship full of pirates?"
"Aside from get in the fucking way."
"I said I'd help. I'm sure I could learn." Hawk laughed sharply.
"You probably don't even know how to tie a simple hitch in the line."
"I could learn," he repeated. "I bet I can." Hawk's simmering annoyance flared.
"A bet? All right, have it your way. Let's put you to the test. You'll have one demonstration and one chance to tie it yourself."
Plum nodded, leaping to his feet eagerly. "If I win, I get to spend the days up on deck. I won't try to escape or harm anyone."
"As if you could. And no, if you win, you'll be permitted a bucket of water and a sliver of soap."
Lips pressed together, the boy nodded. "Deal." He bounced on his toes. "Let's go." Hawk went back to the chart, picking up his divider, the cool brass warming in his hand as he measured the shoreline of an island west of Nassau.
"We'll go when I say we do."
As he continued working, Plum shifted back and forth, then paced across the cabin. Minutes ticked by, and Hawk could have stopped. But he walked to the bookcase and pulled out another chart before settling back behind his desk, enjoying the increasingly agitated nature of Plum's steps. Finally, Hawk noted,
"I'm sure you're used to having everything you want with a snap of your fingers. Sadly, you'll find only disappointment aboard this ship."
Plum laughed bitterly. "I've never had anything I've truly wanted. I never shall."
"Oh, and what poor thwarted desires have you suffered, pray tell?"
Plum snapped his mouth shut, and Hawk added,
"If you'd like to learn of true hardship, we liberated a slaver ship last spring. Some of the men chose to stay with us. I'm sure they'd have much to say on the subject."
Face flushing, his shoulders slumped. "Yes, I'm sure they would. You're right." Taken aback by the capitulation, Hawk blinked at Plum for a few moments. Then he tossed down the divider and rounded his desk.
"All right, let's put you to the test."
He grabbed Plum's arm and shoved him out of the cabin and up the ladder to the main deck. The crew looked askance, and Snell approached, asking,
"What's this about?"
Hawk pushed Bainbridge to his knees.
"I've made a little bet with our prisoner. He thinks he can bend the line as well as any man aboard."
The crew laughed uproariously, and Plum's shoulder was tight with tension where Hawk held him fast.
Hawk could imagine how red his cheeks were.
"What do you say? Shall we let these delicate hands prove their mettle in return for a bucket of water?"